This is episode 94 with Belinda Coker.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxy.
Welcome, everybody. Today I have with me Belinda Coker, and she's an international business consultant, an accomplished entrepreneur, designer, international marketer located in Australia. With her experience, Belinda assists companies and independent professionals negotiate opportunities in the vast global business landscape. Welcome to the show, Belinda.
Thanks, Tayo. It's lovely to be here.
Now, so what is your story? Tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Sure, Taylor. Well, I suppose I've been a bit of a nomad in my time, you know, having started traveling with a backpack in the early 1980s, and I spent a lot of time in Asia. And I actually ended up doing a bit of voluntary work in northern India. And I suppose this early travel bug of mine, you know, because back in 1980, I was 18 years old when I sort of took off. And I suppose this early travel bug of mine helped shape my business philosophy now, which is, you know, the world is just one global community. Because it really is. And I've had a series of businesses, as you mentioned, all in the design field, from bespoke millinery, that was an earlier business that I had, to bringing the first designer reusable bag, which is EnviroSax. And I'll expand on that one later. And now, as you said, I assist people manufacture in China and Taiwan, using my relationships as the foundation of my business.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So essentially, you know, travel, the things you learn from travel have helped in the formation of all the businesses you've had subsequent to, you know, your backpacking days.
Yeah, I would say so. I think, with the bespoke millinery, that was something that I did very, very early on in my design career, and that was sort of making handmade hats for the ladies of Sydney to wear to the races, you know, and that was... So that was quite sort of, you know, that was quite colloquial, and, you know, it was very much, just situated in one place. But everything else outside of that I've done has involved other cultures, or it's involved other moving into other territories, and I've never really had a problem with it. You know, if someone said to me, "Oh, you know, go and do a trade show tomorrow in Japan," I wouldn't have an issue with that at all. I would just get on a plane and go to Japan. I mean, it's not whereas a lot of people, that sort of that whole concept would kind of freak them out a bit.
No, I want to touch on that more. So what do you think about your experience has helped you become comfortable adjusting to different cultures?
Basically, when I go into another culture, I find myself so excited and wanting to be immersed into that culture and finding out about the people within that culture, how they work, how they tick, what kind of food do we eat. You know, oh, we have a siesta, that's a sleep in the middle of the day, wonderful, okay, we do that. And basically just when in Rome, do as the Romans do. And that really does help you when you are entering into another culture or another business, another culture or another territory, to perform a business function, whether it would be opening up an office or just doing business with somebody or just even networking with somebody else. And and once you do find out about a different culture, you know, and immerse yourself into that, it's so much easier to do business. And I don't know, I just love traveling, and I love spending time with people from other cultures. It really it makes my day. It's one of my things.
Absolutely. One of the reasons I was asking is because I think with traveling, there's always this different mentality when you have this, a tourist mentality, and there's the local mentality, you know, and you can go into another country and approach it as a tourist, or you can approach it as a local. And I think what you're saying and when you're talking about, you know, immersing yourself is understanding, you know, getting comfortable, being uncomfortable, but understanding some of the nuances, the cultural expectations, and that inevitably helps with some of the relationships you can build. Yeah. And you're very big on building relationships. I mean, in fact, I think you touched on it earlier when we were talking. What's your philosophy in this overall? Because your businesses have spanned across several continents, and they've relied on the business relationship. So I'm curious about what your philosophy is.
Okay, well, basically, building business relationships to me is just as important as building friendships, and should be looked upon that way. And the one thing that I do see often are people who network for their own self-seeking, grandiose sort of, you know, outlook, and not even considering what they can offer the other person with whom they're networking. And it's basically like making a false friendship. In our personal lives, it's not the dumb thing to befriend someone so only you can benefit. And I have no idea why people then think that they can therefore form business relationships for this reason. And in a business encounter, you never know who you may be speaking to or where that person is headed for. They may even end up being your next boss or the next president or whatever.
You know? So true. Yeah.
Huh. And and in my mind, it's really important to treat business relations with respect. You may not want to be best buddies with them, and asking personal questions may, you know, cross boundaries that you know that you don't really want to go there. But maintaining characteristics such as trust and a good communication base is paramount for a respectful business relationship that has longevity. You know?
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, speaking of relationships, I know you do a lot of business in China. And, you know, the global Asia as overall, really. But can you talk about how you establish relationships in China specifically? Because China is one of those cultures that many people have different opinions on, right? Yeah, and depending on what part of the world you're in. And you hear all sorts of opinions, but you've done that successfully. So can you talk about how you establish those relationships there?
Sure, and Tao, you couldn't be further from the truth, because, you know, to a lot of people, China's kind of like this black hole.
Right.
You know, especially people who are producing in China, you sort of throw money into this black hole and just hope that something that which you can sell comes out the other end, you know. but I've actually written a blog about, a post on my blog about this, you know, the relationships in Asia, in China and Asia, and you know, I could have written pages about it, because, you know, it really is quite intricate. But it takes a long time to build a relationship in China, and the longer you know someone and the more effort you have put into the relationship has greater value. You know, when I'm introduced to someone in China, the person introducing me will 99% of the time stipulate how long they've known that person, you know, even if it's just, you know, this is my friend, I've known him for a very long time. And that to them, that's giving a lot of weight to the relationship. And you know, and they're very proud of how long they've known each other for. So if there's two businessmen and they're sitting there side by side and they've known each other for a long time and the relationship has the longevity, they're exceptionally proud about that fact. And so how did I form my relationships? Well, you know, after many trips to China and spending time with those who I now consider to be my close friends, and as well as there's the infamous Chinese banquet, and I kind of say infamous because it can be a test to your drinking ability.
Oh,
and
many, wow.
And many a Westerner has fallen short here. So when you do sit down at a banquet in China, you need to follow a pattern of toasting. And in China, they drink a very strong rice wine called baijiu. And being a woman, I think it's far easier to toast with substitutes such as, say, water or wine, or, you know, not that the wine's that great over there. But so when we toast at a Chinese dinner or banquet, our toast is directed at one person only. And the words that are said before you drink are very important. And toasting a blessing on your relationship and, you know, may it have longevity and be fruitful for both parties is always a good one to start off with. And then you follow with one, you know, wishing the other person health and prosperity for their family, etc., etc. And the list goes on. And, you know, by doing this, you're cementing, your blessing upon that other person. And, you know, just little things like that are so important. And that's one of the cultural things that I was talking about before, how important it is to understand how a culture works.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and one of the, I love what you said, because that's very specific, focusing on the length of relationship and building that, really, they, you know, Chinese take a lot of pride in how long they've known you. One thing you also mentioned was the drinking, and this is something that I have a lot of Chinese friends here, and they always tell me that one of the reasons they make fun of me is because I have nothing against alcohol, but I don't drink. But they're like, if you come to China, you're going to drink. So they always tell me, because my reason is not because I have no legitimate, I guess they always tell me I have no legitimate reason. I just don't, like, it's not my thing, right? But they're like, well, you're going to drink. If you don't drink, they're going to be. So I'm very curious. You do business with them. What happens if I go there and I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't drink? I mean, am I immediately looked upon as not welcoming, or what's the deal?
Oh, look, you know, I mean, if they're friends with you to start off with, you can probably, you can get away with it. But, you know, as I said before, you know, being a woman, it's much easier for me to say, oh, look, you know, I can't, I don't drink, you know, I'm a woman, you know, in my culture, it's not done for us to be, you know, to drink or something. You make up something like that, and they go, oh, yeah, that's fine. But it is just part of the culture. And you know, if a man wants to go over there, I mean, even if you just did a few toasts, and you know,
man, so you're telling me I'm not gonna be able to escape. I'm gonna have to just take a few sips. I was gonna try and do the little drink and then flip it over the back of my shoulder, but I think that would be too obvious. Wet. All right. Okay. Well, you know, I will continue to work on that, because China is one of the places I haven't visited that I want to visit, but I don't want to leave that immediate bad impression. So I'll work on that, because I'm going to be doing a lot of business. Okay. No, but that's good to know. So I like the fact that you said the length of the relationships and the way you went into detail about the toast. That's very enlightening to that. What mistakes do other businesses do then? Why is it that some countries don't get it when they come there? Or do they come in there expecting to do things their own way and not understanding that there's a certain tradition?
Yeah, totally, really, and you've nailed it. And the common mistake Westerners make when they go over to China or any Asian nation for that matter, is they just expect things to, you know, to follow through like they do in their own country. And a common mistake Westerners will make is being over eager and impatient and not taking the time to nurture a relationship. And what this does is the Chinese counterparts then feel that the Western doesn't value the relationship or even sees it in simply in terms of just a monetary transaction. And for that, it's a bit of an insult. And one thing that I haven't touched on is the term guanxi, and it's what the basis of relationships are built on in China. And it's one of those foreign words that defy simple translation into English. And although it's often discussed, I don't think any business concept is more understood than that when doing business in China. So guanxi basically means preparing the way for a long-lasting relationship. And so when someone from America or Australia or wherever you might be in a Western world sort of, you know, plans to, you know, fly into China, have a quick business meeting, secure the deal, you know, and walk away with both parties happy, it's not going to happen. You know, it's not going to happen. You might end up walking away, securing a deal, but you haven't built the groundwork or the foundations for that business relationship, and you're off to a bad start right from the very beginning. So, if I wanted to put the guanxi in terms of manufacturing in China, is this is an example, once you establish your guanxi relationship with your end supplier, he will then work on his suppliers to make sure that they all provide quality components for your product. And what this ends up being is a chain of good friends all working together to achieve a common goal. And if there's a problem with your production line, your end supplier will invariably sort the issue out quickly and efficiently, and having no prior relationship means that your problem will not be a priority, and it can cause major surprises in your supply chain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh, so yeah. Establishing that, is it guanxi?
Guanxi. And you would have guanxi with your Chinese friends. You know, if you've got any good Chinese friends, you would have already established that. So if you were to do business together, on any level, they would be watching your back.
Gotcha. Wow. This is really enlightening. I'm so excited to learn all this. I'm like, I'm so excited. But okay, now China is obviously is a big part of Asia. But with Asia, one thing that people don't, realize is that it is actually more diverse. I experience this a lot with, being Nigerian, people assuming that Africa is one big country. But Asia's got a lot of, several countries with different personalities. I mean, what are some of the misconceptions people have about doing business in Asia overall?
Well, Asia in itself is, they basically just need to be able to do their homework before they go into each country. Like if they're going to Japan, and don't read up about China, because Japan's going to be slightly different. Japan's going to have different, nuances and different, cultural, there'll be different cultural differences.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But, it goes with behavioral differences need to really be researched before you go there. An example would be the issue of business cards in Asia. So, for example, if you're, networking in, say, or you go to a business trip to Asia, when you give someone your business card or accept a business card, it's important to take it or receive it with two hands. And when you do receive one, you take your time to study it and admire the fact that this guy is the manager of such and such a company, which is actually the same as being the president of a company in America. They call themselves managers there. That's the highest rank. Then you never just take the card and put it straight into your wallet, and never, ever, ever, ever put the card into the back pocket of your trousers. That is the ultimate insult. But, and a lot of people don't realize that, because when we do receive a business card, from somebody in our Western culture, we'll have a look at it, and we'll have a look at the graphics, and we'll admire the graphics, and it goes into our wallet for use at a later date. And but Asian business cards are pretty bland and boring, and a lot of Westerners sort of, look at it, say, oh, yeah, great, got his details, and stick it in and the wallet, and you've already insulted the person straight off.
So you have to admire it and sort of acknowledge the acknowledge the position. That's interesting. And I brought that up because I grew up in five countries. One of the countries was Vietnam, and one of the things I learned while traveling through some of Southeast Asia is that it's so different. Vietnam, I went there, it was very distinctly different from when I visited Thailand, for example. And I've had, Japanese friends and Chinese friends. And, first of all, they hate being compared to each other, because that's just, they're very, very different. But the other thing is just that some are more inclusive, some are more open, and some are more, they have just unique nuances. But do you find that, as the emerging markets are starting to become more of a terminology we use in everyday business, that they're opening up to Westerners? And other concepts or other business ideas from Western counterparts?
I would say there are. I would say in China, though, I think it really is still, if you're looking at it from an individual doing a production or a company doing production on a smaller scale, and we're not talking about a large company buying up a whole factory and putting their sort of company culture into it. I'm talking about if you're actually getting a supplier to produce for you. You really things are still done the Chinese way,
right?
They really are, and I mean, I've done business in Japan for quite a number of years, and although Japan is quite westernized in their business thinking, if you take the time to be on par with them, with their cultural differences, you get a lot more respect. You just do. It's that they appreciate it.
No, and you're so right with China doing things their way. I mean, even with, you know, like, for example, China has their own Google, they have their own Facebook and their own Twitter. So whether it's Weibo or Renren, you know, their equivalent of Facebook and Twitter, it's there, right? So they have their own way. And it's, you know, Apple, I believe, has had, like, some form of relationship where they've worked out terms that Chinese can have it this way and it's done that way. So it's understanding that and working through that. And it's good that you raised that point, because I had completely forgotten about that. But it's true. It's, you know, you go to a different country, but you have to familiarize yourself with that and set your expectations. Otherwise, you're going to be a little disappointed. So go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and that's actually, for me, that's the fun part, you know, researching the other country, you know, whether or not I'm going into Europe or wherever, is, you know, it's the fun part, you know, right. Treat it as something fun, you know.
I agree with you. It's definitely, it's very interesting when you learn about it. I think it's it opens your mind for sure, especially when you see, like, okay, I'm going to have to, this is a new way of doing things. And sometimes when you go back to your home, you never know when that can come into play, because it opened your mind, and it might actually help your creativity, I find.
Most definitely.
So you, is it, and I'm going to botch the name, EnviroSex?
EnviroSex.
S-A-X. Guys listening, girls and guys listening, I promise it's not what it sounds like, but that's a company that you have or you used to have.
Well, I still own the IP.
Okay.
And I still design and I still manufacture for the brand. Mm-hmm. So, but basically, EnviroSex was my baby I started back in 2004. And it was basically back in the days when people were barely starting to use reusable bags. EnviroSex is a reusable bag company, a designer reusable bag company. And when people were using reusable bags back in, you know, 2004, they were darn ugly. And I came up with the idea to put pretty graphics on the bags and try and make the use of reusable bags a fashion statement and make it fun. And it just mushroomed. And it started off with me door knocking the samples, and back in 2004, environmentalism was not the buzzword it was 10 years later. And we ended up on the arms of a few major celebrities, and the brand just then grew quickly into a multinational company with offices and warehouses on 5 continents. So,
wow. So what was it like to set up staff, you know, in multiple countries? Here you are, EnviroSex, taking off, celebrities using it in everywhere, and it's 5 different continents. I haven't lived in 5 different continents, so I'm jealous of that. But then all of a sudden you find yourself as this entrepreneur who's growing this amazing company in different companies, but it's in different countries. How did you set up staff?
Well, basically, you know, we sort of identified areas that we wanted to have as logistics bases, and we went in there and we just started up either another company or an office of the Australian head office, you know, basically a branch of the Australian head office, and that was actually, can I say that was the fun, that was actually quite fun, and it's not necessarily from the logistics point of view, but learning how to do it in each country and sussing out the various grants available. It was a fun learning curve. I actually quite enjoyed that. So, for example, we'd sort of say, right, okay, well, where in the USA do we want to be? And, you know, LA was sort of like the obvious choice because... Yeah. You know, because it's, you know, it's got the largest port, et cetera, et cetera. But we all thought, well, no, we don't want to be in LA because, you know, why don't we try San Diego? So we sort of went into the areas that we wanted to be in. We'd choose towns or cities that if we had to go there, and spend some time there, we'd like it. I mean, no, I'm not saying I don't like LA, but you know, San Diego was kind of like my second home for about, you know, for about 10 years, and I love the place. So, yeah. And but what was fun, and I still, and I hold very fond memories of it, was that the company comradeship that each new staff member or startup office was brought into. And it was, it kind of became like this big global family, and friendships across nations were stuck up, And I still see my old staff members on Facebook, still keeping in contact with each other. And, you know, and perhaps if some of these employers would not have had this opportunity if they'd, say, worked for a local council in their own, in their hometown. So, but, you know, used to, it was a really good atmosphere. It was a great atmosphere across continents, if you you know what I mean.
No, absolutely. And but as with many things, you know, you've got the bad, right? So the good, it was going good. You build relationships, and this was fun to set up the offices everywhere. But what were the challenges?
Well, basically, when you have a multinational, you are dealing with several different time zones, and this was really where I found it difficult. And the one thing I have to say is just be very careful of burning out. You know, when you have offices in varied time zones, and you're a hands-on person like me, which and it's one of my faults. I am very hands-on, you know, but I've learnt my lessons. You know, you can find yourself like totally immersed in being present in the hours that your international offices are open. You know, for I'll give you an example. Say 7 a.m. my time is 2 p.m. in San Diego, and 7 p.m. my time is 11 a.m. in Berlin or 10 a.m. in the UK.
Right.
And if there are issues to solve, or if you feel that you have to solve the issues, that doesn't leave you much time to sort them out. So you need to be far more proactive, I feel, than if you were just managing a company in your own time zone. And I learned this the hard way, you know.
Huh.
So
that, I'm just trying to imagine that you were just saying all these time zones. I'm thinking, when did she sleep?
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just when you sleep, when can you sleep, but also when you can actually stop work and spend time with your family or recharge yourself or anything like that. And those are fundamental, important things that a business person has to be able to do. You know, if I can't spend time with my family in the evening, that's, you know, what's the point of being a mother?
That is, you know, that's one of the basic necessities of being a mom, you know. Just taking care of the kid, having time.
You know, that's the thing. You know, and you know, and I had a nanny, and I, you know, and the bottom line is that I prefer to, you know, if I'm going to be hands-on on anything, I want to be hands-on with my kids, you know, and, you know, and I was actually thinking about, I put in processes in place, and I think this is a really good example of what actually needs to happen if people are considering opening up globally. And I kind of liken it to doing quality control, because the reality is if you are manufacturing in another country, for example, China or Taiwan, you have differences in time zones, geographical and cultural issues to contend with.
Right.
Exactly the same if you're managing an offshore office. Now, if you were to conduct quality control on the last day before shipment goes out, it's sort of like checking to see if the potatoes are cooked when they're on the table. And you basically run the risk of your stock not being up to standard and a whole host of other issues which are causing headaches and stress, and not to mention monetary loss. And if you put procedures in place during QC throughout the production line, you check issues before they arise and you have a much smoother run.
Right.
And basically, if you don't put checks and procedures in place in your overseas office to ensure that the management is doing the job and the staff are doing what they're paid to do, et cetera, you know, you have less of a chance of being bothered after 6 p.m. when actually you should be spending that time, you know, as I said before, with your kids or, doing a yoga lesson or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, it sounds to me like you're saying setting up systems, it's very necessary. One, and also having that expectation of understanding that, you know, if you're building a multinational company, you have to have that good, you know, balance, you know, work-life balance. And if you want to have that, you have to make sure that you have this, the right type of systems that would leave you comfortable enough to to either automate or have someone else in charge, so you wouldn't have to feel like you have to do every single business decision. Because it is difficult. I mean, I'm just trying to think. You're in Australia, San Diego, and you're mentioning Taiwan and all these countries. Time zones, it's kind of hard, and it can be frustrating and take the fun out of the business. And that can get pretty exhausting, like you said.
And you're right. It took the fun out of the business. And when business isn't fun, you don't want to be doing it.
You don't want me doing it, yeah. You might as well. But it's good. I appreciate you sharing the lessons you learned from having that multinational. I think it's definitely something that the audience will benefit from, just because, as you communicate across cultures, one of the things to consider is building a multinational. But you got to make sure you're aware of what you need to be, systems you need to put in place. But as we're winding down here, I want to talk to you on the personal front, because Belinda, you do something that I find very amazing. So with your kids, you take them to a third world country. And I'm going to let you explain that reason, but I think it's very unique. I don't think a lot of parents do that, but why is that something that you decided that you needed to do for each of your kids?
Right. Okay. And thanks, Tao. Look, I really did want to mention this because this is something which is quite close to my heart. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if I've mentioned this, but I have three children. So they're 18, 13, and 11. And when each of my kids reaches the age of 14, I take them to a third world country. And, we explore the sites a bit before we visit an orphanage for a week.
Right.
And there I get them to help out and work alongside the kids. And they really learn how blessed they actually are. I take them at 14 because they're at 14 years old, a child, I think, is at a really impressionable age where, in our world, they're subject to all sorts of material stuff and TV and music idols and social media. And, they start to change into an adult before your very eyes. You've got this little child and then suddenly you've got someone who's, walking and talking like an adult. They're just a smaller version of one. And, getting them out of that materialistic atmosphere into a world where kids have nothing but a few possessions and each other's laughter can be a really life-changing experience for them.
Ah, so good. And how did your kids take care of it? I'm just thinking, hey, we are going to such and such. And then what was the reaction?
Well, I mean, they're pretty good at traveling anyway, but their travel has, up until that stage, had kind of been with me on business trips or family holidays or things like that. So it was for my son. My son, I took him to Thailand, and I think I spoke to you about this with Tao, was having spent time in Vietnam, you'd know about the hill tribes and in Thailand.
Yeah.
And the Akha tribe is one of the hill tribes that is based in the mountainous regions all throughout that area. The problem is that these nomadic tribes are actually without citizenship, so they're subject to human rights violations, lack of education options, and discrimination. And so I took my son to the Children's Rescue Mission, which is near Chiang Rai, and it's a place that gives the children a safe place to live away from, the abominable men who prey on these children to lure them into Thailand's sex industry. Now, my son James, he's actually takes quite a lot of interest, I think he takes after me, but in other nations and other cultures and things like that. And he found the whole concept of what this mission was actually doing extremely interesting, and I had buy-in from him with that fact.
That's great.
He found the whole concept of, that there's nomadic hill tribes, they don't have any citizenship, they're displaced, he actually found it something that he wanted to get stuck into. And I'm planning on taking my daughter to India, but I've got this feeling that she's just watching Bollywood movies and she's got this really different idea of what it's actually going to be like.
Well, I'll have to follow up with you on that, but I'm not. I think it's really cool, though. I was talking to my roommate earlier today, and we were talking about why some of these problems exist in the world, and we said it was lack of education. I think what you're doing is a way to educate and give them a great perspective on what the world is like and why certain things happen at such a very early age. Because you're right, that's an impressionable age, and I remember growing up and. you know, it was always interesting seeing all these new perspectives. But I mean, I started traveling when I was a kid. Granted, I didn't have a choice, but it definitely gave me a different perspective of the world. I was like, wow, this is something that I can apply to my everyday life, and it's, you know, it's kind of led to what I'm doing now. But I just wanted to commend you on that. That's really great, and I'm glad you got the chance to share that on the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, so today we've learned about China. I've also learned that I might need to take a few more sips of alcohol, right? If I want to do successful business. But you've talked about what it's like to do business in China, Asia overall, and kind of the good and bad of owning multinational companies. Where can we find out more about what you do, and how can we support?
Sure. Look, I can be contacted through my website, which is belluco.com, which is BELLOUCO.com. And also there you can see my blog, which I'm currently running a series of posts called Outsourcing in China 101. Mm-hmm. And I'm planning a post on banqueting as well, so that might be up there by the time this goes live. And I'd love to hear from anyone who has any comments on what I've spoken about, or, you know, wants any further information on anything that I've talked about. I'm happy to sort of, you know, communicate with anyone out there.
Absolutely, and I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. I really think you should start a course on this, because I was engrossed in your stories about what it's, you know, I like to do business in China and some of the terms they're using, because it was, you know, I was like a student listening on the back. I forgot I was interviewing you. I was like, oh, all right. What else? What about that? But I think a lot of people benefit from that. You know, it's a very big market, and understanding how to get into that market and work with the, you know, with Chinese citizens is going to be key. So
yeah.
Even understanding outsourcing period can be beneficial for companies that want to grow globally. So I think it's. Yeah. Definitely beneficial. Well, I just want to thank you once again for coming on the show, and I can't wait for this to get out.
Okay, brilliant, Teo, and it really was a pleasure. Thank you.
It was my pleasure.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uydmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.